What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Step by Step, the Micro-Budget Filmmaker. I'm Nick Bowman.
I'm Naeem David.
I'm William Chaffin.
We're going to get into a little bit today about our very own Naeem David's latest short, Lonely Matrimony, which I keep wanting to call it Holy Matrimony. Lonely, Holy, whatever matrimony it is, I'm sure it's a good one.
And it's going to be branded as Naeem David's Lonely Matrimony.
Yes.
John Carpenter-esque.
I wasn't thinking about that one, but yeah, sure.
Well, he's the one who, first one I remember doing that, really.
Yeah, John Carpenter? Yeah.
So.
I was watching
that. I think so, yeah.
In quarantine, I was like, you know what? Fuck it, why don't I just name my fucking movies with my name? And
yeah, it's branding. You're branding yourself. It's not ego, it's branding.
Ego, branding. I like it.
Put that out there into the universe. So, Naeem, you made this movie. It's a 10 minutes short, roughly 10 minutes.
12.
12 minutes, my bad.
Can you
first tell us how this project came to you, how it came about, what put it in motion?
How it magically appeared. I got an email one day from Joe Gribble, who's the producer and writer of Darkest Edge.
Mm-hmm.
He said they're trying to get this short. He has a friend who wrote something who's trying to get it made. They want to do it like bare bones, no budget style, you know, because they don't have a lot of money.
Right.
And he asked me, he's like, hey, why don't you read the script on what you think? I was like, okay, I'll read it. But at that point, I didn't want to make anything else, or I wanted to, but I wasn't sure what yet. But I wanted to do it with the Black Magic,
because
I'm making my feature on the Black Magic. And I wanted to see, you know, I wanted to work it out and get to know the camera before doing something on a larger scale. So
you had shot on Blackmagic as a DP, but not on your own.
Yeah, not as a director.
Gotcha.
So I read the script. I loved it. It's up my alley. It's a dark drama. It's dark.
Yeah.
So
you can't say what or you give it away. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a cool twist to the end.
Yeah, and it's a kind of a story that We've seen it before, but not presented in this way.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
So that's good. It's like my spin on it. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then went to Adri, told Adri, hey, I'm interested in directing this. I don't know what you got going on here. And she needed help from... So I came on as like a second producer to help with casting, locations.
Because the two of you produce it together technically, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
She put in a little bit of money, like, not a lot, like, what, $200, maybe less than that, something like that.
Bare bones type stuff.
Yeah. Just for, like, hey, here's $15 for showing up, you know, just
some gas money. Gas money. People. Yeah.
You know, and then the actors, how we went about that from then on. So once I agreed, it was straight pre-production from then, like, it was maybe a month, but it's a short, so it was fine.
And your goal to make this was to shoot it the way you were planning to shoot your feature.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
So, I'm my own DP, my own editor. I usually write my own stuff, but for Adri, she wrote this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that. It's not too much of me in it. I don't really have to, like, get worn down by that, you know, that whole process of, like, oh, this is, you know, making everything precious, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's easy to do.
It was something that I didn't write, but I love the story, so I was like, okay, I can tackle it from a different perspective.
It's cool when you read someone else's script, then you can visualize it. That's when you know.
Oh, yeah.
You've connected with it.
So since I'm my own DP and whatever, I did my own shot list. So I had how I wanted to shoot it going in. So because I knew that it was going to be me, mostly, and then sound, who was Nathan. Nick Bowman was on as BTS photographer, and then Karen helped me, production assistant. Took some BTS too.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty much it, right?
That was pretty much it.
And Adrian was there,
Less than 10 people.
So she helped keep script.
Yep. And then
I was supposed to be there, and then ended up listing my house that weekend, so I couldn't be there.
Yes. Which is fine. I hate you, but. It's fine.
It would have gone so much more smoothly.
I seriously okay. I'm like, hey, why are we doing a fourth take?
Why?
We got it. Let's move on.
Actually, the only time that we took forever doing was the first scene there's a shot where Vince's character Ed appears, and we did that, like, there was a camera move I wanted to do, and there was a timing thing, and we did it like, what, 12 times?
That's tricky when you're doing times, maybe? Yeah, when you're doing a cool camera trick timing.
So,
you know, or, you know, those kind of things.
Only time we went
yeah.
farther than like 4 takes.
Right.
Now,
how did you cast? You knew the actors, right?
Yes. So the way I went about it was, I had a few people in mind, but they all had their own thing about themselves. So I wanted, okay, so I wanted to go from the character how, who's going to portray the character the best and not, you know, give a different vibe to it. So I have worked with Vince Hobart Smith before, but not as a director.
Mm.
Kind of, but it was like little these 1 to 2 minute things. They were so short that it really was like, hey, just walk over here and look like this. And there really wasn't much, you know, there wasn't really much going on.
Yeah.
You know, collaboration or whatever.
It was, he was supposed to be in Choice before it got canceled.
Really?
Yeah.
He's great. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was like, when I thought of the character, I was like, okay, let's get Vince involved. I want to work with him as actor-director. And then for the female lead, and Vince said yes. So he was like my first choice, first ask. And so
oh, yes.
And same with Jocelyn. I had a couple people in mind, but I was like, I want to see how these two look good together. These two look like a couple. And she's good. So,
and you'd already had a relationship. She was in Darkest Edge.
She was in Darkest Edge, and I already knew her. So I was like, okay, Jocelyn, will you, the weekend of whatever, what do you guys think? They both liked the script. They wanted to do it. It was fun. So,
and then how did you break down the schedule? So it said, well, how long was the script? Was it 10, 12 pages, something like that?
It was like 10 pages. And we had, I wanted to do it in 2 days.
Okay.
Andrew was kind of like, can we do it in one day? I was like, no.
That's a lot of pages.
Yeah, that's
S is too many.
And my max is like 8 pages a day.
Yeah.
Max.
And plus, it all takes place at night.
Right.
So, 2 nights.
That's, so you should have a Saturday-Sunday night, right?
Saturday-Sunday
night.
So you didn't start till like 6 in the evening?
Well, we got there at 6, but we didn't start fucking shooting until like 7 or 8 because the actors would be coming on like past the time, and then we'd still be, you know... We had a fiasco with some pearls. For
the
pearls.
Yeah,
right.
You should be behind the scenes on that.
It, like one time it just prematurely just...
They're supposed to shatter or something, right?
Yeah.
So to get that right was tricky. Yeah.
Oh, and they prematurely shattered too one time, yeah.
They just slight touch and they just fall apart, so we had to wait a long time for that, but we just rehearsed and went over everything. Where was I going?
Scheduling.
My mic was all over the place. Scheduling. So what I did was I scheduled it from like 6 to midnight, basically. Both times. Both days.
Did you wrap pretty close to on time?
The only time we went over was, I think the second night we go over?
It was the second night, yeah.
The second night we went over.
Because we were done at like 3 a.m. the second night, so it was, I think, pretty much.
It's a little longer on the second night.
Yeah.
No. It was 1 or 2. It wasn't 3. I'm pretty sure.
Or 1.
Okay. Doesn't matter. Good. I got your point.
We get after midnight.
I don't
midnight
want to betray that. It's from 6 to 12, and we wrapped at 3. No, it was around. It was only an hour over.
It's about an hour.
All right.
Just because
the record straight. No.
Just because there was a shot we had to redo from the previous night. Because in the monitor I can see it and it looked good, but when I played it on the fucking TV, there was things appearing. I saw reflections, and I was like, God damn it! But we had a monitor on set, but we didn't use it. We used it the second day. We used it in the beginning, but when I was getting down on the ground and I was looking through and I was getting a little gritty with the camera, I didn't really use the monitor.
Yeah.
But
you had the monitor more set up for like Adrian and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought I had...
You're obviously running a camera. You don't need it.
And I thought I had seen everything, like, in the frame, but I had not. I didn't see the fucking shadow of the light, so we had to review that shot the next night, so that put us over. And then the shots that... the 16 takers for that.
16 takers.
That's
a lot. That's a lot of takes.
I had to get it right. I was like, I'm not leaving here until I get it right. Because sometimes I on set.
Wait, leaving this house.
I'll compromise with myself.
Sometimes you do 12 because people can't say stuff in unison. You know what I mean? It's whatever happens.
And I knew
Hail
I wanted
Mary.
It. And I always
Mother
like,
God.
Pray for us, sinners. I wanted to get that shot because. It was good. And I came up with that shot in the moment. I didn't come up with that in
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, ooh, I'm seeing them there. I love that one. I like a nice reveal of the character, so the camera was just kind of like there and turns like a 180 and it reveals Ed in the door frame. I had to do that and get it right because either it would shake too much or the timing was off or whatever. Alright, like it was mostly me fucking up, really.
Mm-hmm.
By like the fifth take, they all were doing it right and they were all doing it differently, so. And the thing is, Vince, oddly enough, one thing I learned is that Vince, in the beginning, because we never worked together as a director actor, I was trying to get to, you know, as a director, get to know how his style is, what he wants to do, and stuff like that. Because I already know how Jocelyn operates.
Jocelyn kind of jumps in and goes.
Yeah. She's very much like, let's just
do it. She doesn't even rehearse that much. She just kind of has a take and goes.
Vince was a little bit like, because every time I'd say cut, and it'd be like, I think he'd be like, what would you think? Or I would go...
So he was someone who wanted a little more feedback after each take, then?
He didn't really ask. He just asked me, are you good with that? I was like, what do you think?
Oh, I see. I got you.
So I pulled a Gus Van Sant. I was like, what do you think about it? I was like, because he kept... And I kept asking him every take and every time, what do you think? And he's like, why do you ask me that? I remember one time in the bathroom scene, he was like, why do you... I don't know. Like, what do you feel like? It's whatever you want. I was like, well, if you're not comfortable with it, if you don't like what you're putting out there, why don't you just do another take and let's keep going? Like, I'm not gonna be like, okay, we're gonna do these many takes and that's it. I want you to feel comfortable. I want you to get into the groove.
I want you to get it all out on the, put it all out there.
So let's keep doing it. He's like, okay, I want to do that again. And I was like,
so you kind of had to pull that out of him a little bit.
I had to pull it out of him.
Realize that's what he was.
I wanted to make him feel comfortable. You know. So I made him.
That's good. That's a good advice right there to adapting you as a director, adapting to your actors rather than forcing them to adapt to you.
Yeah.
And because of that, you got the best of him.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, you only got 80% of him.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't do that.
Because I didn't connect with him or whatever, and like didn't really hear him out or whatever. But he was.
And being a short, you don't have a long pre-production time where you're doing character meetings and stuff where you can kind of figure that stuff out before you're on set, mm-hmm. as you would on a feature. Where you kind of had to figure it out on set. So.
Exactly. And with the wardrobe and stuff. I mean, Adrian called me and stuff like that with that kind of thing, but they pretty much handled all that. Adrian really pretty much, we went through, walked the location, because it was going to be either my condo or a different house. And I was like, if we have this different house, it fits the vibe, it's open, we can play with the angles a little bit more, because downstairs...
It was a friend of hers, right?
It was a friend of hers.
Okay.
Who's... Yeah.
Because it all takes place in this one house.
All takes place in the house.
Which is okay to do on a short.
Yeah.
Please don't buy into the crap of doing that on a feature.
No, and Adri, I'm pretty sure she wrote it not even thinking about that. She just
I think that the story wouldn't work outside of that.
Yeah, the story just works because of that.
Right.
It's, you know, I don't think it would work any other way.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, so...
So you guys put this together. So from the time that you got... That you committed to directing to the time that you shot... What was that time frame, you think? Give or take.
We shot the weekend of the...
You shot mid-October.
Yeah, 15, 16, or 17.
Right around there.
And then...
You got the script. It was like September, wasn't it?
September.
That was pretty quick. I think recall you...
It was about a month turnaround, if I remember correctly.
A month and a half.
Because I feel like I was done editing Guilt, so we were into September at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'd say so.
So you guys put it together pretty quick.
It was quick. But that's fine, because I want to get it... Like, for me, I want to do it and get it done and learn. And
nobody wants to fuck around. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to sit on it. I want to keep going.
Right.
So, it really... That, you know, doing it quick... What am I trying to say? Doing it quick in that time, it just... Keeps you going for the next thing.
Gives you less time to second guess.
Yeah.
You go more. When you move faster, not rushed, but just fast.
And you're better at making
decisions.
You're
efficient. You tend to be more decisive. You don't second guess yourself. You know, and I can relate to that sitting around waiting for Guilt because of COVID. I was just second guessing myself. Do I want this? Do I want that? Like, you think too much almost.
Yeah.
So you didn't give yourself that. You just went.
No, I just went
and it turned out great. So talk about a little bit about editing. So you edited the movie yourself.
Yeah, because I shot it myself. I knew how I was gonna edit it. I knew how I was gonna cut it, edit and out. You ever see that the era of MTV Cribs?
No, huh?
I have to show it to you because he's talking about editing and yes. He doesn't know what they're talking about. He's like, we'll just edit it out. And he's like, edit it out. he's just like that. The air actually doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like,
just edit it out.
We're gonna edit it out. The hand motion. But I knew how I was gonna cut the thing, so didn't put a cut together. And then once I put it all together, just like dialogue wise. Then I went back and actually did more creative choices. Okay. L cuts, J cuts, more the fades and whatever, and just, right. You know, really organizing, you know, how I want it to,
okay.
to go. And then what I did was, since I shot it and with the Blackmagic in 4K, I kind of cropped in a little bit on some of the shots. And it doesn't look bad. You can't even tell.
No, I couldn't even tell. I didn't know until after you told me.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that too, so it's like, that tells you how good that looks. When
exactly.
You like that.
And I'm going to add a little bit of grain to it anyway, so it's going to look film-ish.
Yeah, with that film grain vibe. Yeah.
And I always do that. I love that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Now, maybe you said this, but you were talking about when you were filming this, by filming it on the Blackmagic.
Oh, yeah. You said you were filming
it. From making a movie to making a film.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that right?
You said that on set.
I said that?
Yeah.
You did say that.
I say a lot of things.
Yeah.
That's valid.
You say a lot of things. Yeah, because it looks more...
I remember you said that.
It looks more cinematic. It doesn't have that DSLR feel.
Yeah.
Now,
you don't feel like you're watching video.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I made every single one of my shorts on a DSLR Canon 7D Mark II. Every single goddamn one of them. Shot a feature with my Canon 7D Mark II. That's on Amazon, ride or die, plug.
Yeah. Darkest Edge was shot on...
a Sony A7 II, I think.
There you go. I've shot a lot of cameras. So.
But the Blackmagic is a cinema camera.
Yeah.
And it really creates the cinematic feel that you want.
Some people say it's the poor man's Red. I would almost say it's the poor man's Arri.
Okay.
Because they're more compatible.
They're more compatible.
I think Arri goes a little further in some of the visuals that you can get with it, but I mean, you have to get deep into it to see that. So, and I mean, it looks spectacular the way, you know what I mean? So you're bringing your skill set as a DP director, but then you're also letting the camera do its thing.
Yeah, as long, you have to know how to use the technology. You can't just go in there, shoot this thing on a Blackmagic or like in a cinema camera and not know
how to light, not how to use angle.
You still got to light.
Frame.
Yeah,
yeah. You got to do those things.
When people think of like a camera that works in low light, they don't have to do any lighting. You know,
that's not 100% true. Yeah.
You still got to light. You still got to know.
What you can do is take advantage of the available light you have, whether it's windows, ceiling lights, lamps, maybe putting in your own bulbs, which is, you know, you can buy just white.
Which I put in my own bulbs.
Yeah,
because
just
some of the
regular 60-volt bulbs. You can get at, you know, Home Depot or Walmart or something, and they work fine.
The dining room lights in where they were sitting were burnt, so I had my own light bulbs.
There you go.
I just switched them out.
Then it's just getting a small LED to get some edge light or a key light or get a little light in their eyes. Like, it's really small stuff like that where you don't need this massive crew to move all these huge, heavy lights. So that's what the technology gives you, is a little less, you know, a little more freedom. But here's my next question. You produced, directed, shot, edited, you ran camera, you color graded, you did all these things yourself. And I know this from experience, you get kind of lost in the world after a certain point.
Yeah.
So what do you do to sort of get an outside perspective to help you see it a little differently?
Okay.
As if you were collaborating with an editor or collaborating with a DP or something. How do you work around that? You know what I mean?
So for set, I'll split it up. On set, I had, like, Nathan was kind of, he was my sound dude, but he was also, like, kind of my second pair of eyes in a way. I would kind
As
of
you
like,
were for me on Gil.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would be like, hey Nathan, how do you feel about this? He would help me rearrange lights, and I didn't force him, but I was like, hey Nathan, I kind of like put him in that role, not by his choice. I was just like, hey, he was curious about it, and he was, you know, learning with me, and he wanted to know, and I was like, hey Nathan, what do you think of this? Just so I have another pair of eyes to look and be like, okay, he's like, okay, this is cool. And he's
you also
like,
have Adrian there as well, who's the writer, so you
Adrian's
get her
there.
View a little bit.
So I set up the angle, and I'd be like, hey, Adrian, what do you think of this? You like this shot here? And I was going to do the shot regardless. It was just I wanted her opinion on it.
Yeah. Maybe she says something that triggers
And that triggers another idea for another angle or another shot, whatever. But
I remember us doing that on Guilt, and I was like, oh, we gotta shoot in this area again. How do I make it look different?
Yeah.
We tossed around, and we were I don't even remember how we came up with it, and we were like, what about profiles?
Side profile.
Instead of straight on, like over the shoulder, you do a profile. So stuff like that happens.
And then during editing, putting it together, once I have put the assembly cut together, it's just literally the footage just put together from the script. And then I was listening to Indie Film Hustle, and Alex was talking about, so what is your take on the assembly cut and the first cut? Do you think they're the same or whatever? And the girl was like, I think the assembly cut is like the first cut. And I was like, eh. I disagree. The assembly cut is just putting the footage together. My first cut is the creative part of it. That's my first cut. The first cut is what I want people to see.
So your assembly is basically, it's almost like the soap opera approach where they cut on everybody who's talking. They always show who's talking.
Like, it's from the script. Like, the assembly cut is for me to see and for me to put together and be like, okay.
Then you sort of see it in order.
I see it in order. I put it all together no matter how long it is. And then now, okay, how can I chip this and make this...
See what reactions you want to...
See how
I... Ooh, I really want to see her reaction when he says this, or... Now... When she does this, I want to see him react to it. Mm-hmm. You find those things that way. So that's how you find it.
Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting.
And then
I do it completely differently, but...
Yeah.
Same end result, but different way to get there. So that's fascinating.
I watch it all the way through, and I'll be like, okay, I want to extend this scene out, or this shot out, make this shorter. I want to cut here. And then once I reach a place where I'm like, okay... I've done this first cut. There's no more I can do to it right now. I'll step away. I'll do something else. And then I'll come back either later in the day or the next day. I want to see it. And then we'll see if...
Sit on it for a bit.
Yeah, I want to see what I did. And sometimes I'll be like, nah, I don't like that. I'm going to change this. I'll give myself...
It's just like writing.
Yeah.
It's just like writing.
What are we in? We're in December. I started... editing, obviously.
Right after you start shooting, right?
Right after.
Or a week later?
So in that week, I started putting everything together. I was labeling stuff and putting stuff together. So it's been, a month? Not even... No, it's been a month.
Yeah, you cut the whole thing and easily within about 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
About 3 weeks after you were shooting that you sent it to me.
The first time I showed somebody was when I had, a second cut going through. Like, after I'm tweaking more things, then I'm like, okay, I need somebody else to see this. Because I can only do, I don't know how people are going to react to this. I don't know if it's working or not. Like, right. I know, but I'm
you too... Have a, you have a feel.
You're too drenched in it.
Yeah.
You're too much
so you send it. So you send your cut to multiple people, almost like you do your script, to get feedback on, is this working?
Well, who sees it really first is Karen, because Karen will come in and I'll have, like, a scene done, and I'm like, hey, what do you think? And she has no idea what to think. I'm just like, emotionally, what are you feeling here? Because she can't see the whole thing. So I just want to know that I'm heading in the right direction. So I'll take it, even if it's bad or good, whatever, I'll still keep going. But I just want to gauge where I'm at. I'll send it to you, and I'll send it to Nick sometimes. Sometimes I'll send it to Nick. But I really wanted this one to be like with Adri. And then I think I sent it to who? I think I just sent it to Adri. I mean, I sent it to you.
Yeah. I know when you sent me the second cut, I was like, damn, this is really tight. Like, I think my main suggestion was, I think there was one, like, dinner scene where I was like, maybe trim that, tighten that up a little bit. That was really my only feedback. Like, you had a really nice, good cut when you sent it to me, like, because there was very little feedback that I needed to give. I felt like... Because I watched it and I just kind of fell into the story. That's when I know it's working. Because I fell into the story and I was just entertained. Okay. And I was like, oh, pacing is good. Shots look good. Acting's good. Like, all that's there. And I just followed the story. You know what I mean? I went back and watched it a second time because I realized I did that. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to pay more attention to, like, certain shots and certain cuts and stuff like that. And so that's when I went back and watched it a second time. It's much easier when it's a short because it's only, 10, 12 minutes.
Right.
And... That's when I was like, I could see, like, you had a shot where someone hits their head And I could see the, so you have to then, so I turned the volume off. Mm-hmm. I was like, does it work visually first? Because you obviously haven't had your sound design yet, so the sound, mm-hmm. so when it cuts, it's cutting from one shot to another, rather than having that shot smoothed out and sound design. So I turned the volume off and I watched that shot. I was like, okay, the edit works.
Okay.
And that's what I said to you. I was like, yeah, that one shot where he or she hits their head, mm-hmm. can't remember which one it was. And I was like, once you get the sound design, I think the cut works, but once you get the sound in there, I think that will smooth that out.
And you saw a cut. You haven't even seen any of the cuts afterwards. There's like maybe not one, maybe two versions later that I just tweaked shots and fixed them up and just made them look better.
Right.
Like I noticed one of all the wide shots, I noticed that. And this is like a little tip. Like when I'm designing, like when I'm planning out the shots, you shoot it, and then later when you're editing, you find, oh, a little bit of this light switch came into the shot. Okay, so let's crop that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Or this is a little bit too wide. We're seeing a lot of things I don't want to see. Let's crop it in.
Tighten the frame a little.
Just by a little bit. And then if I miss a couple close-ups, you know, which I realized, man, I wish I would have had a close-up here. And I thought about it. I was like, wait a minute. I shot in 4K. I can
just cut it.
I can crop it in a little bit and get some close-ups.
You really can set your framing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do it over the shoulder or you know something like that where you have enough space, you crop it in and mm-hmm. you lose nothing. You frame it exactly the way that you want. Exactly. You just have to make sure that within that cut, they don't move out of frame or you know mm-hmm. something like that. But other than that, like you really can reframe it for the most part how you want.
Yeah, and that kind of saves your ass if you know how you're going to shoot it. Because you can't just go in there and shoot wides and then later, oh, well, we're going to get the close-up, I'll crop it in later. No, that's not how it works.
You have to have the angle right.
Have the angle right, get your close-ups, and then, oh, I missed something. That's where that comes in handy.
Yeah.
You know, it helps knowing that you have that.
If you have over-the-shoulders, for the most part, you can crop into a close-up on those and not have any issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going from a two-shot or a wider shot, you can't. Because you're just not going to have the right angle.
It's a little tricky.
Yeah.
Unless you have a little bit of them or whatever.
Unless you're keeping that angle or, you know, you want that specific angle, then it can work, you know. Mm-hmm. I did that on Guilt, so, like, you can do it. But it's got to be specific. But it does give you the freedom to jump in there. You can do it a little bit on HD, but you can't crop it too much because then you'll start to lose quality.
Mm-hmm. You start
4K gives you that ability.
Yeah. And even with 4K still, if you go into a little bit too much, you start to get that graininess and that noise.
So if you don't go too much, like you don't want to go to a wide and a close up. But if you go over the shoulder or close up, you're not going to lose anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're already close enough.
Exactly.
So it really helps with those kind of things.
And I got, and one thing I didn't do, one of my shots I like to do is like go from going like that. What is it? Like a pan?
Right.
Like pan from character to character.
Right.
Right.
I never got that on this one. I wanted to, and I had that on the list.
I'm a big fan of that kind of shot.
But I never.
Letting your pans be your cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to do it, but
I've done that in a couple films.
I don't know why I never did that. It was probably because of lighting or something. It was so fixed and small in that area that, you know, sudden turn, you can see certain things. But one, like, the main thing, or one of the main things, probably the main thing, I'll say the main thing, that I learned on this one, because I wanted, you know, do my feature myself like I did this one,
mm-hmm.
is that I took longer setting up lights than I needed to because I was doing it myself. So I realized if I had a couple PAs to help set up lighting after, you know, hey, set up these lights, let me go talk to the actors, let me do this, let me do that.
Frees you to talk to them.
It cuts some time.
It's a way for you to still DP.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to still DP, but still have some help with equipment.
And I don't want a lot of people on set either. So
yeah, because we had like less than 10 people, pretty mm-hmm. much, right?
That's cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cast and crew, like 10 people. And that's how I really want to make my movies. I don't need 30 fucking people.
You don't need that until you get the bigger budgets, where you have to have safety, you know, for stunts or shutting down streets or, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of things. But even on a bigger movie, if you're shooting in a house and it's dialogue and there's no, you know, action or limited action, you still don't need all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You might have a little bit more because you might be using, you know, bigger lights or things like that, but you can still keep it, you know. Stanley Kubrick did that 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Did it on Eyes Wide Shut.
He would, he would limit his crew so that he could take that money and have more days to shoot. So people, you know, thought, oh, he always goes over. No, he cuts his crew down to just what he needs so that he can then have more time to shoot.
Exactly.
That's brilliant.
It is.
Because there's so much waste. That's the problem that people need to realize, and we've talked about this before, is there's so much waste in Hollywood. What we're doing is we're cutting the waste and we're getting it down. Now, we're going even further because we have to without money. Mm. You know what I mean? But if you had money, you'd hire a gaffer.
Yeah.
You'd have a gaffer and a grip on set. Right, we'd pay the, you know, you'd have mm-hmm. those people, so the gaffer grips would basically set up your lights for you, but you'd be your own DP and your own camera op. Maybe you have an assistant AC that helps you set up camera and switch lenses and those types of stuff. But even then, that's three people.
Yeah.
That's only three people. But you have two people helping you with lighting, and you have a person helping you with camera. You maybe have a production designer and their prop person.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's it.
And then you have your costume and makeup for...
If you need those.
If you need those for your cast. And then maybe you have a sound mixer and a boom. So even then, on a bigger budget where you can pay those people, you still only have 7-8 crew members. Technical crew.
Yeah.
You know, handling lighting, camera, sound.
And I'll tell you, I've done shorts where it was literally just me and a camera and the actors. And mm-hmm. I've done shorts where it's, you have 5 to 10 people. And I've done shorts where there's fucking 20 to fucking 30 people.
Yeah, your dilemma.
Dilemma, and I've done a couple
project.
Others where there was like grips and
yep.
right, yeah.
Fucking a first AD,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
I remember shooting Streets of Syndicate, and we had three cameras at one point. So you have three camera operators. You have your sound person. We had a couple people gripping.
I never made that mistake again. I did three
yeah.
cameras or two cameras
it's
once.
Awful.
With different fucking like a Sony, and then you had a Canon, and then.
You think, in theory, on paper, you think you're saving yourself time because you're getting all the shots at one time.
Nope.
And you're not going to have to do as many takes. But the problem is that then, because you're on a low budget, you don't necessarily have the big monitoring station to have all the monitors. So you can't watch all the shots at one time. So you're bouncing around to different cameras to make sure the cameramen are getting the shots you want. You have to explain to them the shots that you want. So all that time, quote unquote, that you think you're saving by not doing as many takes, you're wasting by bouncing around to all these different cameras. You should absolutely go with a single camera. And this theory that what makes performances better? No, it doesn't.
No.
Because all actors work different. If you have an actor who, like you said, Jocelyn, jumps in and is ready to go, right? Then you have other actors who need a little bit more warm-up, right? They need to do a few takes before they really get there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They need a little more warm-up. They need a little more prep. Nothing wrong with that. Everybody's got a different approach. So what you do in that is if you have two totally different actors, you shoot... The single of the actor who's kind of on it from the beginning first, do a couple of takes on them. Now the other actor who's warming up is getting that warm up in those shots. So you're just being strategic in how you shoot it. Then you flip and you get the reverse of that actor.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've done a single camera, so you can light more specifically. You can do more specific camera movement because you don't have these other cameras in the room. You have a more limited crew. You know, when you start shooting quote unquote documentary style, it actually makes it more complicated.
I was having JD on camera, Cody Phipps on another camera, and then, I mean, I trusted them, obviously, but it's like, I didn't need two or three cameras on that fucking thing.
Right.
And also, there was this one thing that I did where I had the first AD and all that kind of crew, to go back to that real quick, and we were moving really slow, and I'm used to moving real fast on these shorts, and I would go, what's taking so long? Oh, we're setting up the lights. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
I was like, not that, like, I appreciate them being there and doing whatever they're doing. It's just...
Because what you don't think about is if you're shooting a conversation, you have to set up, and you have two cameras going, you have to set up a key light and edge light on both actors. So it's more lighting you actually have to do.
Yeah.
Not less lighting. Mm-hmm. So it actually ends up taking more time. So to anybody out there who wants to shoot multiple cameras, unless you're on a big budget, you
know, Ridley Scott,
Peter Berg,
Michael Bay,
The Kingdom, you know, his big movies where he shoots those cameras, that's different. They have the time and money to do that.
If you have one explosion, you have one explosion, and you got to get it one time. Then you get the fucking 10, 20
Or you're Michael Bay, who has an action sequence on a highway in every movie he's ever made. Yes, then you have 16 cameras on set.
If you're doing action stuff, you need more than
exactly,
one camera.
Yeah.
Because you can't miss that shit. You
right.
can't fuck up.
Yeah. You can't mess up a car accident or a car crash or even a fight scene. It's beneficial because you can't put the actors through that as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's a minimal fight scene, you can. But if it's a big one, you know, those are the times. But that's big budget stuff. We're talking micro budget. Don't fall into that trap that if I have multiple cameras, it's going to be easier. It's not.
That's what I thought.
I really did. And then if you don't have the same camera, and then you got to try and match them, and they don't match. No. It's a mess.
Not only that, I was... Dilemma was my film school, so I was shooting on two Canons, all
right?
I had and a friend of mine had a Sony, and I was like, whoever has a camera, just come on to set, let's shoot something. So that's how I was going. I was like,
you were doing it the way you thought you were supposed to.
Yeah, and then I had like 20 fucking 30 people coming in, PAs and extras, and then I had this, and I was like, who, what, why?
Why?
And I go, I look back on it, and I was like, that's just...
The benefit is you were open to looking at it differently, and a lot of people aren't. Yeah. So either one of two things happens. Either one, people continue to make movies that way, and they suffer when they don't have to suffer, and I don't understand that. Or two, they stop making movies.
Yeah, because they can't sustain them.
You can't sustain that without a lot of money. You just can't. So what we're basically trying to tell you is, and the reason that we wanted to go into your short, is this is how you can make these things and still make them look good. What does it matter what happens behind the camera? It only matters what happens on screen.
Mm-hmm.
What's the audience going to see? It's all that matters. How you get that on screen is really irrelevant. It's more fitting to your personality and your style. What we're trying to do is tell you, you can do this with you and a camera and a mic. That's all you need.
I've proven it numerous times.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yes, you're going to make something somewhat limited, but there are ways to ramp it up. So if you practice that first...
You're practicing filmmaking anyway.
You're always practicing.
You have to make stuff. Yeah. Like, you always... It's like practicing guitar or anything else. You got to practice. Even if it's you and a camera and a couple actors.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Gradually build up.
Yeah.
Gradually build up. Then you can get to a project where you say, okay, I have... let's just say 10 days, but I have 2 days where I have these big sequences where I am going to need some extra people. Then just ramp up your production for those 2 days or just those two scenes or whatever it is. I have a fight scene or I have a shootout or I have a chase scene. Whatever it is that you have in your movie where you need to ramp up crew a little bit, you ramp it up. Then the rest of the movie, you keep it really small. So you can even do it that way. You know what I mean? And I made the mistake on Syndicate where we thought we had to have these people on set all the time. And looking back, there was just a couple of scenes that we needed some extra people. And if we would have done it that way, it would have made the shoot so much more efficient. The movie would look different, which would be better. It just would be so much better all the way around. So I love the way that you approach this on here, and that's why I wanted to ask you. You know, but that is tricky when you're kind of a one-man filmmaking machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? How you get that extra perspective. So having those people whose opinions you trust is invaluable.
Yeah.
I mean, you were huge for me on Guilt by, you know, giving me certain feedback along the way on set, because it's another director giving that feedback. So,
yeah, and when I show the short to you and Adrian, people, like, you guys give me constructive criticism on the cut, and it's all for the cut. It's not about, you know, anything else. Which some depending on who you ask. I've had those people where it's they misunderstood what, you know, you're trying to do.
Also, you get feedback from multiple people, and then you use what you like.
Yeah.
If you don't agree with something, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had Ben reach out to me the other day about Guilt, and he said after he saw Next Doc, and he's like, hey, you know, Doc looked good. He's like, how did the edit come along? He's like, did you use any of my feedback and this kind of stuff? And I said, yeah, I used what I liked.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't use what I didn't like, and I do that with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's how you do that. But you figure those things out the more you do it. So that's why we say, like, go out and make a bunch of freaking shorts. Really learn your process and learn what you like and what you don't like and all those things.
You don't have to make them for anything, because if you look at all my shit, short-wise, like, they're all made for nothing.
This one's by far your best, in my opinion.
I appreciate that. It's the Black Magic, man. It's that fucking thing.
I think it's the Black Magic. I think because you had the Black Magic, you put a little more detail into the cinematography.
And this is what I say when I say it's the Black Magic. It's not about the technology. Right. That's just, I've been making shorts forever, and
you built towards the Black Magic.
I built towards
it. You didn't just start out, I never made a movie, I'm going to go get a Black Magic. You built, you had a DSLR, you had a Canon or Sony.
Knowing how to tell a story visually.
First.
First,
yep.
Knowing, practicing the craft, knowing my style and my voice first.
Yeah, and you had the mentality of being open-minded to changing and doing things a little differently than the norm. Yeah,
and I don't like, and for these types of shorts and for this type of stuff, I don't, I love collaboration, and early on when I was doing shorts, I wanted to do, like, I love collaboration, but waiting for people's schedules and this and that, it's like, yeah. Why am I waiting on people too much, and I'm just, like, waiting for somebody else to make, like, no, I'm gonna shoot it myself instead of getting a DP, because why give somebody else the satisfaction? I want to do it. Mm-hmm. Why give somebody else my footage to edit? I'll edit it. Why should I let somebody else direct what I've written? I'll fucking direct it.
You have so much more creative control.
You have so much more creative control. You know what you want, and you can communicate what you need to the people that you need. Like PAs, that's all you need. Sound, whatever, special effects, whatever the hell. It's just more time for that instead of communicating to just random people about shit. No, it's just, I know what I want. Here's how we're going to do it. Boom, this is how we're going to do it. There's no fucking around. 3 minutes. You gotta cut that.
Yeah, we gotta cut that up. Yeah, we'll cut it up.
Want to wrap it up?
Yeah.
Alright, so just kind of wrap it up a little bit. When do you expect to have Lonely Matrimony out? Like, when can the world see Lonely Matrimony?
When can the step-by-step...
At some point,
the step-by-step audience.
Step-by-step team.
At some point this month. Nathan's doing a second pass at the audio. Okay. Taking in a couple notes that I gave him. And I only had like a couple notes.
You're even talking, doing your own sound editing on the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you're even taking it a step further. Yeah. I'm too chicken shit for that.
I'm too much of a...
control freak?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, man, I feel you.
I'd rather, you know... do the sound editing and then have somebody else mix it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do the cleanup, because that's the stuff that takes the longest. Mm-hmm. Is the cleanup and smoothing out the dialogue always the thing that takes the longest.
But sometime this month you can see it, and then either right before or right after, I'm going to release a behind the scenes, like a 7-minute thing. And it's just behind the scenes clips. That's it. Of how we fucking made it. So, and I think it's really good. And I think it's awesome. Informative. And if you guys need to know or want to know how to make shorts and stuff like that, This is how you do it. Watch it.
And listen to this episode. Watch your behind the scenes thing. Watch the short.
And tell us what you guys think too.
See those things in sequence.
You know,
so that you can hear it, see it, and then watch the final product.
Yes.
There you go.
There we go. What's up?
All right. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Step by Step, the Michael Badger Filmmaker. Be sure to look out for Naeem David's Lonely Matrimony. Little touch there, because it's kind of like the John Carpenter thing, like we mentioned earlier.
Yes, I love it.
Right?
Nick. And also, it's going to be out in, we'll put it in festivals. It's a festival movie. It's the only festival movie I've fucking done. You know?
Yeah.
My movies aren't festival movies. But this one's a festival
movie. This one is.
Yes.
For sure.
Thanks so much. We'll see you next time. Bye.